Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 21st, 2014. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, an experiment from homebrewer Alex Baker, brewing with spring water from different parts of Michigan. Will we be able to taste any difference? Does water actually make that big of a difference in the taste of your beer? Spoiler alert, it does. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can find me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. Our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on the Google Plus, too. And thanks to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. You know how it works. Whenever you find that itch to go shopping on Amazon, scratch over to our website first, basicbrewing.com. Click on our ad, our Amazon ad. That will take you back to Amazon. You won't know any difference, but you'll be helping us to support this show, and we greatly, greatly appreciate your support. We have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. Our Basic Brewing iPhone app is on iTunes. Our Android app is on Amazon.com. We're in the BlackBerry podcast directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're in the Windows. We got a Windows app, too, and we're just, you name it, we got it. Check out our brewer's logbook at basicbrewingshop.com. In the front is a blank calendar that you can use to track your fermentations and plan your brews. And there is room in the back to log the details of up to 50 batches of brew. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. And thanks to everybody who's done so already. Protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. Check those out at basicbrewingshop.com. For a limited time, you can get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with the purchase of any of our DVD combos. And if you are a bottle cap collector, this thing is for you. When I use it, you push down. It's like a cylindrical plastic thing. You push down on that thing, and the bottle cap comes off pretty much undamaged. So, at least in my experience. So there you go. Let's jump into the mailbag, shall we? Joe from Haverhill, Massachusetts and Kansas City, Missouri writes, I brewed a 2-gallon basic stout. 1 gallon, I used Danstar Bella Saison dry yeast, which is fast becoming my new favorite yeast. The other gallon, I used Danstar Nottingham ale yeast. What a difference a yeast makes. The Saison stout tasted very similar to one that I drank in France. And the other day, I brewed a mixed fruit, grape, ginger mead using the Bella Saison. We shall see how that turns out. I bet that'll be tasty. A mixed fruit, grape, ginger mead. Joe also says, I also found a homebrew shop owner who is smart enough to realize that small batch brewing is legit. I now use a 2-gallon plastic bucket as a primary. I use a 1-gallon jug as a secondary. The advantage of that is I can get real close to having a full gallon at bottling time. Very nice. I may have mentioned on the show that I've been playing with a 3-gallon plastic water jug that I got at Lowe's to brew 2-gallon batches. It's one of those carboys that you see by the door as you're leaving. I can't remember the brand name of the water, but it's just a plastic 3-gallon carboy jug. So far, it's worked out. A hoppy beer that I fermented, and it came out really well. I now have a scotch. I'm calling it a scotch-ish ale in it that is probably ready to bottle. And you'll see that in an upcoming Basic Brewing video show. It's a cool way to get 3 6-packs of beer. This comes from Rich. My friend and I visited a local brewery recently and found out that they were selling off some of their used bourbon barrel stock. Naturally, we walked out the loading dock with a 53-gallon barrel, which has taken up residence in my garage, much to the chagrin of my family. My friend and I are hoping to barrel-age a favorite stout recipe of ours, then sour the barrel. We washed out the barrel and noticed it was leaking water, so we filled it up most of the way with water, rolled it around, and left it alone for a couple days. When I got home from work today, I popped the bung, and whoa, blue cheese. I shined a flashlight in and saw a pellicle had formed across the top of the water, and there were even some blue cheese-like globules to go along with the odor. I sent a picture to my cousin, who also brews, and he reacted like there was a gas leak in my house. I tried looking up my barrel smells like cheese on the internet, but apparently this is an uncommon problem because I can't find very much information that says whether the barrel is salvageable or not. I saw one thread that suggested the culprit is butyric acid and that adding Brett will eventually fix the problem. But I'm still a few weeks away from even having the 53 gallons of beer to fill the barrel. Any advice? Well, for this question, I punted, like I do every now and then, to Michael Tonsmeyer, the author of American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations. And Mike has way more experience with this kind of thing. So I sent off Rich's question. Mike says, sounds like mold to me. I'd get a new barrel. Spirit barrels are pretty safe when they are saturated with 120 proof spirits, but once they are filled with beer, they need to be cleaned and either filled with a holding solution, metabisulfate and citric acid, or burn a sulfur wick immediately after emptying. So that's immediately after emptying with beer. And Mike says, as a side note, never burn a sulfur wick or anything in a fresh spirit barrel. That's good advice. Boy, that would be... Whew, shoot some video if you do. No, don't do that. Mike says, butyric acid usually comes from sour mashes exposed to oxygen. More like Parmesan than blue cheese. Brett can turn some of it to a fruity ester, but usually some butyric remains. Sorry to lay down the bad news, but once unwanted microbes get into the wood, there isn't a great way to get them out. Filling a barrel is loads of work. Best to give it a shot with the best barrel you can. So thanks very much to Mike for the advice. Sorry that it's bad news, but I think it's good news. I mean, if it's a nasty barrel, I wouldn't want to spend all that time and money brewing all that beer to fill the thing up just to have a bunch of, 53 gallons of a nasty beer. So sorry about that, Rich. Everybody should buy Mike Tonsmeyer's American Sours book. It's a good read and very inspirational. Okay, let's go back to our hotel room in Grand Rapids, Michigan. This is the next-to-last interview we recorded surrounding the National Homebrewers Conference. I hope next year's conference is just as fruitful. That's a challenge to those going to San Diego next year, assuming that all the legal hurdles are taken care of, and we can go to San Diego for the conference next year. Alex Baker contacted me well in advance of June this year to tell me about his experiment collecting water from different parts of Michigan and brewing the same recipe with it to see how differing water chemistry profiles affected the character of the beer. I thought this would turn out to be fun, but I didn't expect the results to be as dramatic as they were. It's very useful info, even if you don't live in Michigan. We recorded this after we recorded the experiment with Tim Lieber's Tasty Meads that you heard last week. So if we're a little silly, there's a reason for that. And that's also what I'm going to blame on my continuing to call Ian Liam. Oh, well. And we're back in the Grand Rapids headquarters of Basic Brewing Radio. And we're going to introduce everybody across the room. Alex first.
Alex Baker from Ann Arbor.
Ian Griffin from Ann Arbor.
Tim Belanger from Ann Arbor.
Mandy Sparks from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Steve Wilkes.
And we have an experiment. And it's an interesting experiment because I come from Hot Springs, Arkansas, which has both hot springs coming up out of the ground at like 140 degrees Fahrenheit, and there are other springs around the city that aren't hot and have different mineral compositions. And I've often thought how fun it would be to brew with those different waters, different styles, and to see what character of each style was complemented by each water profile. So, Alex, you've beat me to it. But tell me about what you've done.
Well, we first started by enjoying a beer with my friend Tim here, and we were talking about water, and that's kind of how the whole thing began. I knew that there are a lot of springs in Michigan. Michigan obviously is pretty much surrounded by water, and I think the amount of springs kind of shows that there's a lot of lakes and rivers that run through Michigan. So got online, I found a site that had a lot of information on different springs that are throughout the state, actually throughout the country and world, but we're focusing on the ones in Michigan, and we found four neat springs that were kind of around the Michigan mitten, as we like to call it, the lower peninsula here, and towards Lake Huron, towards Lake Michigan, north, south. So we went ahead, collected 15 gallons from four different sources, and brewed the exact same beer, same ingredients, a very basic blonde ale, and we wanted to do that so we could accentuate, you know, the water, the taste, and the different things that water can contribute to the finished beer.
So you picked something that wouldn't be masked by a bunch of hops, or something that wouldn't have the character of a yeast that would throw off the results as well. But you're just talking about water here.
Yeah, just water. So we had, you know, it's a USO5, you know, just basic, nice clean yeast, one single hop, and that was it. We wanted to not complicate it, you know, keep it simple.
And talk about the sources.
The sources were all unique. We really did enjoy gathering them. One was from actually someone's house, who was bringing a spring that was just the water pressure from the spring was coming directly into his house, and he was using that spring water, not filtering it or anything like that. So we tapped onto that. Our other source was from an actual roadside spring, and along a beautiful river up in Lansing, Michigan, and then we went to Petoskey, and Petoskey, Michigan, is home of three different spring sources that are very unique. In fact, I'm not going to tell you what one of them is like until we taste the beers, and then I'll say that. But one is very unique, and when we went up there, it was frozen, so we weren't getting any good flow. Fortunately, there is a local brewery that taps right off of it and doesn't do anything to it either. So we were able to get the water from them, and that was a nice experience. We stopped and, you know, had some refreshments. That's always good in your journey. And then it was a short trip after that. Actually, a bit longer. It was down to Benton Harbor area.
That's where we started.
Yeah, that's actually. And then that was all the way down southwestern Michigan. So it was a nice big loop around Michigan. And I stayed away from our area because I know how our beer tastes, our water tastes like in Ann Arbor. So we wanted to taste some new waters.
What was the reaction from people?
Everyone I told this to, I thought it was a great idea. I thought it was really neat. And each location we went to, everyone said, come back. with the beer so we can taste it. So
of course.
So it was a fun trip. It sounds like we're going to be doing it again, but with beer with us this time. So it was well received. In fact, with some of the roadside springs, we just were there collecting. We saw people come, just locals, and we told them what we were doing. They're really excited. They've been drinking it since they were kids and their parents were kids. So these have been free-flowing. They probably think people who buy bottled water are insane. So
a lot of people like that.
Yeah. So it definitely gave me a new, a new outlook on water sources. So.
So Tim, what did you think of this idea when you first started?
Well, I mean, it was a great idea because with beer, there's four basic ingredients. You know, so. And the water is the one thing you're not going to get shipped in. It's too expensive. Yeast, hops, barley, all that stuff you can get from anywhere in the world relatively economically. But the water you're not going to change. And it has such a huge effect on the end product. So it was a great experience so far. We'll do it again.
And Liam, how do you enter into this?
Well, I actually work for Adventures in Homebrewing in Ann Arbor. And, Alex and I are more or less neighbors and obviously brewers and very interesting to always hear what he's coming into the store doing next.
You're that guy.
Yeah. He's one of those guys. And just, you know, from a brewing perspective, I know that the things that we tend to focus least on tend to be, I'd say, water, yeast. I mean, everyone's hop crazy. You know, everyone's paying more attention to malts and whatnot. But it's really interesting to hear what he was doing. And most of the brewing occurred on Big Brew Day at the store this year. We had about 50 brewers, most of whom were using the same waters. Mm-hmm. And so Alex was, you know, different in what he was doing in that respect, Alex and Tim. And just really interested to try the beer as well.
Mm-hmm. So were you able to taste, do a comparison tasting of the water itself before you used it for brewing?
Yeah, we did. We were just taking cups and just drinking it right in front of the well, or right in front of the spring. And I thought that was fun. Just, and
there
were differences. Yeah, there were. And differences in color as well, and clarity. You know, not anything murky or anything like that, but just kind of, you know, where you would look at one and you'd say, oh, that's really clear. But then you look at the next one, you're like, oh, man, that's really clear. And, you know, so, you know, it would be the same thing grabbing Ann Arbor tap water, which, you know, isn't my favorite thing to brew with. But I can tell you that it tastes like that for a reason. You know, it's for drinking water. So tap water versus spring waters, there's night and day differences there.
Now, were there any, like, for instance, you can get water from, you know, a sulfur spring, or there definitely water that comes out of the ground that is probably consumed more for the perceived health benefits rather than the taste or the, you know, the enjoyability of drinking the water. Did you pick water because of its neutral taste characteristics, or did that enter into all that?
Oh, actually, it was on the website I went to, and I don't work for them. I don't, but they're called findaspring.com, and they have testimonials from people. So I was reading through some of the reviews, you know, like the Yelp reviews of that water source. So.
The service was awful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there are these strange guys standing around there asking questions. So yeah, so we decided to pick ones that had the best you know reviews and you know good drinking water. The comment we got a lot was, this makes great coffee.
Oh, yeah.
And that was kind of a good thing too. So I'm very aware of those sulfur, very egg smelling, and people say that they've got the health benefits, they bathe in it or they drink it or whatever, and there is that on the site as well. They've talked about that, about the health benefits. But I've never tried to brew with that though. I know where I can find it. I've been to some cabins up north, and a lot of people from Michigan probably know what I'm talking about. But yeah, there's some interesting smells coming from water, waters up north. But these were not them.
Yeah, I had some cousins that lived out in the country, and their well water was very sulfury. I mean, you could walk into their house and you could smell sulfur. You take a shower and you smelled worse than when you got in. And you know, when you drank a soft drink, they didn't filter their water, so you had to drink it as quickly as possible before the ice melted. So I can't imagine brewing with that kind of water. So
it'd be interesting what would you know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the yeast would dig it. You know, who knows?
Yeah, you know, the end product would be, but yeah.
So what we're going to do, and you guys have any comments or questions in the peanut gallery, we're gonna rely on you for your palates here in just a minute. But
I don't really have any questions. I think it's really an interesting experiment. And like you guys, I've had well water or spring water throughout my life from different places. And yes, there's a big difference in it. And I think water is one of those things that we tend to take for granted, you know. And so this will be a really fun thing to check out.
Yeah, me too. I think this is a really cool experiment. I'm looking forward to trying the results. And most people live near places where they probably have springs and stuff, or at least can get a local water source. And so it's interesting and something that everybody can play with a little bit.
So do you want to, you said you've got some water chemistry. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that before we drink the beers, or should we go ahead and drink the beers and kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of tell you what I'm looking for. This is new to me. I didn't did not write the book on water. I am reading it, and the one, you know, the one I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, we should have called John Palmer. He probably would have liked.
It would have been good to have John here. Absolutely, and it would probably been, you know, talking. I would have felt like I was a freshman in that 101 class at Michigan State, where I was like, "What is going on?" Yeah,
and there would be beer involved.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, exactly.
Deja vu all over again.
So, but yeah, no, I'm definitely going to do this again. And so, right now, we're going to focus on bitterness and on maltiness, and okay. Those are, you know, primarily affected by sulfate and chloride. So. If you're sulfate, you're chloride, then you have your sulfate to chloride ratio, and that is kind of where you get good balance, right? Mm. So you had some really hoppy beers or some really malty beers, and then, you know, so this can help with those balances, especially those beers that are 9-10%, and you're saying, what? This is what? And there are some great beers out there that, actually, we just had one yesterday that I was kind of scratching my head. But anyway, back to... But yeah, so that, and then we'll, you know, I'll go over a couple of the other things that I tested for and how I think it might have affected the, you know, the clarity, the, maybe some of the taste, and the, maybe the efficiencies of the mash.
So. Okay. All right. So shall we just, we will shut off we'll pause for a moment. We'll shut off the recorder and we will put our palettes to work and then we'll come back. Okay, we're back and we're markedly more silly than we were before. This was, okay, first, before we get into the real information, first impressions, Steve, just of the whole process.
My first impression is that they're four distinctly different beers, and so assuming that the only variable was the water makes a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. They are dramatically different. I'm really interested to see which one is which, and maybe get an understanding of the water and what makes which one is the one that produced the one I like the most.
Yeah, and we may each like a different one. So, yeah, the samples, I was relieved to find out that it wasn't as hard as some other things, that the differences between them were market. I mean, so easy to tell that there were differences. Now, whether my descriptions of what was different are accurate, that's a different thing. So, Alex, what just happened? What did we do?
Well, you didn't have that much beer, so the samples here. No, we
these are 10% beers.
Yeah. Well.
Not tomorrow.
Well, as I mentioned, these were blonde ales, and yeah, we definitely could taste the difference between the four, and I was also very surprised. I was a little worried that it wasn't gonna be a lot, then you'd just start making stuff up. You know, you're mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah, this one tastes, you know, but there really was a difference in the four, and I'm very, you know, I guess it's early in the conference. You guys probably, your palates are still very good, but you guys did a great job. You really did. I mean, I was amazed. You know, when you guys picked up that sulfur, that water had the highest amount of sulfur.
Okay, well,
sulfate. Sorry, which, okay. You know, I don't know how that equal. You know.
Okay. Equals. Well, let's go through. But let's anyway, go so, through.
sorry.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry. Well, yeah, that was a good one. I guess how do you?
Well, let's go through the four let's go through samples 1, 2, 3, and 4 okay. and kind of our impressions mm-hmm. of and you are our court reporter.
Okay, very good.
And so we can't go back and change our minds. Right. You wrote down what our what our impressions
were. All right, here we go then. Then James, we'll start with you here. You felt that sample number 4 was the most balanced. You also said fruity. And sample number 4 came from, let me double check, Petoskey, Michigan.
I knew it.
And then also you said that the number 3 sample was the most hoppy, which was the, let me double check here, the Water Valley, which is near Benton Harbor, Michigan. And number 1 was more malty, and you actually described it as grainy. So that was the Lanson. And number 2, which was the one that was the funkiest out of the three, or out of the four, I guess you would say, and it had a unique aroma, I'll say, and it was had some sulfur smells, and it was a little bit more bitter. That was very similar to what Steve had. You know, basically Steve did mention that that the hoppiest one had the most, number three, had the best head retention. So I don't know if that's to do with how I carbonated it or not, but you know, how it traveled from Ann Arbor yesterday. And then Andy, you know, he went against the grain a little bit here, and he said that number one was only slightly malty. He didn't get a lot of malt from it. He did agree with number two, had a unique smell. The flavor, you know, didn't really say, you know, didn't give you what the smell was, so maybe put nose plugs on when you have that one. And then number three was also hoppy, but he said it had a lot of grassy flavors to it, so it was, you really could taste the hops in number three, and I think you all three of you guys agreed with that. And then number four was the balanced, most balanced as well. So not too far off of you guys, but you know, I think you all pretty much were in agreement to what you were tasting and seeing, smelling.
Yeah, and as far as preferences, what did you prefer, Steve?
I preferred number one. I liked it because it was kind of sweet and very refreshing to my palate. It's a beer that I could think of as a really nice lawnmower beer. And I felt like it was in balance with itself, so that it wasn't very hoppy, it wasn't very grainy. I mean, it was grainy, I agreed with that. That was a good comment, grainy more than malty, but it just kind of all fit together real well for me. So I liked it. That was my favorite of the bunch.
Andy?
My favorite was the number three. I thought it had the best aromatic qualities, reminded me the most of fresh hops, but also when I tasted it, I felt like it had the most real malty kind of character too. So for me, it was the one that showed off both the hops and the malt the best.
Yeah, I agree that number three, and again, there's no wrong answer on this section of the quiz, but number three was my favorite. In fact, the hop character was so pronounced in that one that I asked for a clean glass because I was afraid that Tim Lieber had given us a wonderful chai mead earlier, and I was afraid that there were spices, a spice residue left in my glass from an earlier sample. And so I got a new clean glass, and I was tasting the same things. And the hop character was much more pronounced in number three. The hop flavor, I don't know, but the aroma as well. But it's just like, wow, that's a completely different beer, and the hops are really showcased in number three. Mm-hmm. So that's what we thought.
Right. Well, you would like some results here?
Yes.
Okay.
Hit us.
Well, I guess I already gave that away, but the one with the highest amount of sulfate was number two, and I didn't think that it was going to be that much different because the sulfate to chloride ratio was actually rather balanced, but they were both high. So you had high malty, you know, potential maltiness and high potential bitterness. Mm-hmm. So there was something going on there that didn't...
It was also the most cloudy.
Yeah, and it was. And, you know, we can talk a little bit about, you know, the TDS, you know, meter that I use, a total dissolved solid. So it actually had the most potential salts, organics, that you get from when you evaporate water. That's what the TDS measures. So there was definitely more stuff in there. So maybe that had something to do with how it cleared out. Mm-hmm. So I would like to mention, and this is something I would not do again, is I used Clarity Firm, which I love using in all my beers. So I used Clarity Firm, and we still did not get that as clear. And I love the product, but I think it could have taken away from some of the results a little bit. But anyway, it's a small factor, but it's a great product. I use it all the time. But the most bitter beer, or the one that would have the most potential to have bitterness, was the Water Valet beer, and that was the one that you guys all picked as the hoppiest. And the reason why is that it does have It was the second highest in sulfate, which, you know, gives it that bitterness, hop lingering time, and the aroma accentuates the hop flavor. But having the sulfate to chloride ratio, it also was the lowest chloride. So it actually was very hop potential. So the chloride level was almost zero. I mean, it was very low, and that does add, you know, for the maltiness and the fuller, sweeter qualities. And then the Petoskey beer, you guys all said that had a nice balance, and it was almost, the ratio was almost 1-to-1. So it was probably one of the most balanced. It was on the lower side, so it didn't have a lot of sulfate, didn't have a ton of chloride. But interesting, when I gathered that water from Petoskey, it's been compared to Burton on Trent.
Interesting.
So its hardness, its total hardness was in those numbers. So kind of an interesting piece of information there. And then the Lansing was the, let me see, well, you guys all thought that was very, I believe, see Lansing Malty?
Number one.
Yeah, see the maltiest, yeah. And that actually did make sense. It did have the ratio of sulfate to chloride or hop to malt was the biggest ratio, but the hoppiness, the sulfate was the lowest, and the chloride was the highest. So you would say that the malt kind of took over the hoppiness potential. Wow. So you guys did a great job. I was very impressed. Because when I, you know, as I said, I'm learning as much as I can here about water and you know, and actually being able to see it and actually compare it and it making sense, then, you know, that water book I bought was good and learned a lot from it. And they're right. They're right. So great job.
Awesome.
So yeah.
Well, I'm kind of blown away. I mean, I was afraid that these were going to be so close together, and they are. There's some aspects. Number three just jumped right out, though. But that one was the hoppiness of that beer. Or the hop character of that beer just jumped right out of the glass, or at least it was the flavor with me. Mm-hmm. How interesting! I mean, how cool that this is, that the sensory data kind of backs up what the scientific data
right,
says.
Right, and I think going back and gathering these waters, there will be different styles that I would consider, not the blonde ale. You know, obviously, you know, IPAs are. You know, dark ales or stouts or porters or whatever, that definitely does play a part in each one of these. But yeah,
a roasty beer would be fun to do, like a stout or a porter, with this similar thing.
Right. You know, as a matter of fact, I was thinking to do kind of a light and a dark style from each one, and then you'd be able to kind of see this the dark one is better. Yeah. This one, the light one is better. Right.
Yeah, and that's something I think would be a great resource to have for brewers, you know, in certain regions to know where to get water, what brews the best porter in Michigan. Or I can tell you, and I'm not going to say because I don't want to offend any of the breweries around here, but there's some that brew better porters than ales, or excuse me, than pale ales, and vice versa. I don't think it's a coincidence that Western Michigan has some great IPAs and some great beers overall. I mean, there's some great breweries out here, and I think we just with that Western Michigan water that we just tried at the Water Valet, and I think that's
three out of four.
Yeah, I guess you have a northern west side, I guess you could say, but yeah, that was the closest to, I guess, where we're standing now. So, and that was the one that was probably the most unique, I think, out of the four. So.
Well, I think, I mean, you definitely see how different beer styles arose in each area of the world, depending on the water that was available. I mean, that's just
yeah.
It seems obvious.
the charcoal filter market, I think Brita wasn't really popular back then. They couldn't filter the water. So yeah, they made do with what they had. And I'm a firm believer of different pockets of the United States. You know, you look at San Diego, you look at Pacific Northwest, you look down in obviously Colorado. I mean, you got some of the greatest water out there, and some of the best beers come out of those locations. So,
I mean, we get reaction from these guys. So Tim, I take it you've done this before. I mean, you sampled these before.
I did. I was as far as my favorite, I was with Andy in number three. It seemed like the beer I liked the best. You know, it's a little maltiness, but the mouthfeel wasn't heavy like you get when some beers are really malty. You got that heavy mouthfeel and like that. So that was my favorite, and it was nice to see that, you know, there was a difference between all. So our work was interesting anyway.
Liam?
Really thinking about, just like you said, different regions of the world, different waters, and we're saying like, well, how do I make that pale ale, when maybe we should be saying, what's the water I have and what should I be doing with it? We're trying to, you know, we've got the luxury of changing things, and really interesting to say, well, this is what we can do very well. So I kind of like that idea. I'm thinking about zip codes and like, brew these beers there, you know.
But instead of how to brew, it's what to brew. And of course, you can always start with distilled water. You can always start with a clean slate and then add the chemicals or add the minerals to build the water that you want for the style that you want to brew.
Yeah, I think going on what Ian said, I think we would love to just pack up the car or pack up the truck and just head around the United States and gather water and brew on prem, like, you know, brew there and then throw it in the car, you know, in the fermenter, and then head on to the next place. Yeah, we need a sponsor. But I mean, that would be excellent. Unfortunately, there's this thing called work and all this stuff, but, and kids,
make it your work,
and family and all that. You know, they want me leaving for that period of time. But yeah, actually, my next experiment, I'm going to go to local states.
Right now. Brought to you by
speaking of work. No. we have Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Illinois. I'm going to hit all three states and get a water from each one, but I haven't figured that out yet. So
that's
cool. Closer. I can drive there, but it's not Colorado.
Have I been calling you Liam and your name is Ian?
Yes.
Oh my God. That's what I'll cut out of the show.
Because I figured editing. Yeah. 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 That's very Spinal Tap of you.
This isn't doubly, by the way.
So one of the things that I think I've taken away from this is, as homebrewers, especially new homebrewers, you know, you start out, it's all easy, you just mix the ingredients together, we don't want to make this complicated, but after you get a couple, and you can produce great homebrew with simple slump, your domestic water, but then as you're trying to grow as a homebrewer, this tells me that getting a grip on understanding how water works will help you take your game to the next level. Is that for everybody? No. But for the people that want to brew better, getting a grip on water, and this is something that I don't understand, you know, and I've been brewing for a long time, but it's one of those things that I keep pushing off because I find it complicated, and I say, I'm going to focus on the things I understand, and I'm just going to use the water I have. But this shows me that, wow, I can actually make even better beer if I understand the water better.
Or find the style that fits your water profile and do that.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. It's, you know, sometimes I'll buy a jug of Mountain Valley water and I'll brew with that because I really want the carboy.
But Mountain Valley still comes in glass carboys.
Yeah,
so.
I've seen that. But the water is really good, and I've brewed a lot of beers with those over the years. And sometimes I'll buy water, you know, spring water in the jugs, and then a lot of times we live in, you know, kind of in the mountains in Arkansas, and sometimes of the year the local water, it tastes like the lake. I mean, it does not taste good. But sometimes of the year when it's not turned over, or it is turned over, I don't know which way it is, but when it's clear and clean, our regular water tastes great. And I'll go ahead and boil it off, you know, get the chlorine boiled out of it, and I make beer with it, and, you know, it's good beer. Mm-hmm. So, but you're right, you know, really understanding what it does for you is a big difference. And maybe it explains why you like I'm going to kind of black and white this. Like, I make stouts, and they're never really very good, but I make pale ales, and boy, they're always really good. Well, maybe it's the water, and you just don't know it.
Yeah.
Maybe you're doing everything right, but that style and that recipe just is never going to give you the result that you ought to get.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, again, I'd like to play with, mm-hmm. and there is a, and talk about myself for a while, that in my hometown in Hot Springs, Arkansas, there is a brewery down there that is housed now on the national park ground. It's in one of the old bathhouses that's been vacant, and now they've put a brewery in there, and the water has so many minerals coming out of those hot springs that they have to replace the pipes every few years because it's like hardening of the artery. The minerals build up inside those pipes, whereas if you start out with a 2-inch pipe, after a few years, it's down to like a quarter of an inch because it's calcified. It's literally deposited stone inside of those pipes. So it's really going to be fun to see what beers they brew with that water that come out. So I need to get them in touch with John Palmer to tell them what.
Yeah, for sure.
Try
this stuff.
And not waste a lot of time trying to brew the wrong styles.
I'm not sure. I think that's a TDS issue, or a really high Tolbazov solid when you had that much in there, because I was reading about that, and it does affect the pipes and your stainless and all that, and I don't know if that's a way to reverse that. I don't know.
Yeah, they may have to deal with beer stone. I know they call it beer stone, where you get the calcification on the inside of the tanks and such, so that's a little bunny trail, but it's an interesting one that we probably will visit in the future. Literally. So any final words, any final comments? This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it has been. I appreciate you letting us hang out with you this afternoon. I would say that it's been a dream of mine to meet you guys, and honestly,
you need to dream bigger.
I know. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to meet you know Andy, Steve, and James, and she's like, okay,
that's like, the right that's the appropriate response.
Go have fun, but I really do appreciate it, and we had a blast doing it, and I'm glad you guys were able to.
No, it's our honor, and as we're joined by housekeeping here in the headquarters. It is a privilege to be able to participate in these kinds of things, and all the time I'm saying, aren't we lucky to be able to do these things, and not just listen to somebody else talking about them, but to actually do it in person. And so we are extremely grateful for you guys for. Sharing this with us, and if you do another one, let us know. We'd love to do it again.
I think I sent you my first email 8 years ago asking you about Idafor or something. I don't even remember what it was. I was like, oh, he answered me back. All right. Anyway, but yeah, full circle. We're back here.
So. Or I thought you were first thinking about the experiment 8 years ago.
I've been thinking about it. Yeah.
We may be around in 8 years. I don't know.
I would hope I'd be a little bit more educated on water in 8 years. Not that.
I feel more educated right now. All right. Thanks, guys, very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, thanks again to Alex, Tim, and Ian. What a fun experiment. Also thanks, as always, to Steve and to Andy. Andy is of thehomebrewery.com, our local homebrew shop here. Try this experiment. If you've got springs in your area, or if you can get reasonably priced spring water from somewhere else, it's a fun thing to do. I started out brewing with Mountain Valley spring water from my hometown, Hot Springs, Arkansas, because like Steve, I wanted to use the carboy for secondary fermentation, and my beers were pretty tasty. Or at least I thought so back then. I did win a couple of awards, so. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You'll find our bottle openers on our shop. Our Basic Brewing growler bags are available as well. Protect your precious homebrew and craft beers. You take it from place to place. Check out our support link, where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain,
low-tech lagering and decoction mashing, and introduction to wine kits. You can find them all on our site, along with combo deals to save you a couple of bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And for a limited time, you'll get a free bottle opener included with any of our DVD combos. Check out our shirts in the store, too. Our brewer's logbooks are in the store as well. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country. His cellar DVD is on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Featured products this week that were first per purchase through the link are Abco Tech Water Resistant Wireless Bluetooth Shower Speaker with Suction Cup and Hands-Free Speakerphone. So you can talk on the phone while you're in the shower. Why not? And Freybill Deluxe Vinyl Crawfish Trap with two-piece torpedo. We called them crawdads when I was growing up. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo or on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.